Welcome to the Bunker Hill Cheesecast, brought to you by Heine's Cheese Chalet, a little place with big taste. I'm Missy Horsfall, Director of Tourism Relations. The town of Millersburg, Ohio, had somewhat of a confusing beginning as the town was laid out twice and became known as New Town and Old Town. The original town plat for Millersburg was laid out in 1815 by Adam Johnson and Charles Miller. However, none of these plats were registered with the state, and 9 years later, Charles Miller and Andrew Johnston laid out a new town, which would eventually become known as Millersburg. Holmes County, made up from portions of Coshocton, Tuscarawas, and Wayne counties, was officially formed on January 20 of that same year, and Millersburg became the Holmes County seat the following year. By 1833, the village had 10 stores, 4 taverns, 4 practicing physicians, 3 attorneys, 1 printing office, 1 meeting house, 1 apothecary shop, and 73 dwelling houses. It grew to 673 residents in 1840, but a fire in 1844 destroyed much of the town. Just 2 years later, Millersburg had restored itself to 4 churches, 2 newspaper offices, 13 stores, 1 iron foundry, and 1 grist mill. The town continued to prosper, and in the 1890s, manufacturing came in the form of an iron and steel shafting company known as the Brightman Manufacturing Company. In 1902, L.H. Brightman, an industrialist from Cleveland, completed his 28-room Queen Anne-style home for his large family. Although Brightman left Millersburg in 1906, new manufacturing continued to come to the area, including a state-of-the-art glass factory opened in 1909. After co-founding the Fenton Art Glass Company, John W. Fenton had a falling out with his brother Frank and came to Millersburg to start his own factory. Although well known for its carnival glass and its color and quality, the factory eventually folded in 1911. While these historical figures have faded through the dusty veil of time, we are fortunate to have the tangible reminders of their brief sojourn in our area. The Victorian House Museum, the original home L.H. Brightman built, and the Millersburg Glass Factory, with over 400 pieces of glass made right here, represent a period in history only 100 years ago, helping us step back into time and imagine the way it was then. We're talking today to Mark Boley, Executive Director of the Holmes County Historical Society. Mark, so much to talk about in so little time. Thank you for joining me on the podcast. One of the reasons I really wanted to have you on the podcast is because I feel like both the Victorian House Museum and the Glass Museum are hidden treasures in our area. Like, I lived here for a long time, never even knew about them until I got into tourism, and then I started hearing about it. So that's pretty remarkable that we have that right here in our area.
Yeah, and you know, that's not uncommon. We're in an area, we're not unique to that, because a lot of areas have hidden treasures, and a lot of times local people never, you know, go there until maybe there's a special event, and then they make the comment, oh, I didn't even know this was here,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's not uncommon for that to happen. But yes, it is a hidden treasure, and it's, you know, people love history. They like heritage travel. That's mm-hmm. one of the big tourism key points. So it is desired by a lot of people. They like to tour old Victorian homes and get a feel for what it's like back in the time when it was built and kind of fantasize about it. And I think it's kind of relaxing to people in this day and age to kind of go back to a, you know, a simpler mm-hmm. time. And it just gives them a little moment of reprieve from everything yeah. going on.
Yeah, the world we live in is pretty chaotic, pretty busy, so that's great. Now, tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you get involved in the Historical Society and the museums?
Yeah, well, that's kind of an interesting segue into where I came from, because I was a professional photographer in Ohio. I was active in Ohio in the State Professional Photography Association, but I was locally had a photography studio for 20 years. During that time, I was always interested in history, and sometime back in the 80s, I became a board member of the Historical Society, which owns the Historical Society, or owns the Victorian House and the Glass Museum, and it was about the early 90s, mid-90s, that they decided to do a strategic long-range plan, and one of the things came out of that was that they needed some direction, and they needed somebody to take over the reins part-time at first to just kind of give it a little boost because they were kind of at a point where they didn't know what they were going to do. And so at the time, one of them came to me and said, well, why don't you be part-time director? And I said, no, I said, I'm real busy with my photography career. And so they hired a director, and she didn't last very long. She was only there about six months. And I remember at the time, one of the board members, one of my old history teachers from high school, actually, what goes around comes around. And he came to me one night and he didn't ask me. He said, you will be the next director of historical science. So I had no real choice. Actually, I did. But so I went into a part-time and I did my photography also. Well, it rapidly developed into a full-time position because basically when you get somebody to start a process, then it is part-time for a while. Then there's the old thing about affording to, you know, pay your wages and all that stuff. So that was part of my job to come up with funding for different projects. So in a nutshell, that's basically where I started. And that's been over 20 years ago that I became director. And the first year I was part-time, and then after that it was full-time.
So I know you're a history buff, and that's how you got into this, but And for me, just even doing the podcast, I've had to do a lot of research. And so I've been learning more and more history of the area. And I guess it's true that every place has a story, right? I mean,
someone
first came here and every person has a story.
Oh,
so there's stories everywhere. But I find this area so fascinating in so many different ways, like surprisingly different kinds of history. You know, you go to one portion of the county or the neighboring county and you can learn about the early Native Americans or you go to this portion of the county and you can learn, you know, something else entirely. And so it's been fascinating for me to hear about some of those things. And I am excited that we have the quality of museums that we do in Millersburg, which is right next door to us here in Berlin. And so it's all along that State 39 trail so people can find it easily. It's not hidden or, you know, out of the way when people come and visit.
Sure. Yeah. It's really, in many cases, it's right along the way because we get a lot of the traffic from the north on 83 that come down from Cleveland, Akron area into Millersburg anyway. So they pass the Victorian house and, you know, on their way to Amish country. And I'm glad you brought that up about the unique history of the area because I do a program actually where I go out public speaking on. It's called Holmes County, The Rest of the Story.
Oh, neat.
And it's all about some of the fascinating historical things that people don't realize about Holmes County because today I think there's an emphasis on because it was such a build up area around the Amish community and the Amish history and everything, they don't realize that we weren't always that way. And yes, we've always had Amish, but it wasn't, there's a lot of rich history and a lot of firsts that happened. Like a lot of people didn't realize when I was giving the program that we had one of the first cable TV systems in the whole United States in Millersburg.
Really?
Because the guy that developed the cable TV system, the technology behind it, was right here in Millersburg.
Wow.
And so he used Millersburg as a test market back in the 50s when he developed it. So there's little things like that people have no idea.
Cutting edge and never knew it.
Yeah,
wow.
Exactly. One of the first automobiles built in the United States was right here in Ohio, actually by one of my relatives, John Miller from Trail. That's a fascinating story. And so there's all kinds of really interesting. And when I give the program, sometimes I've given it out at the Inn at Honey Run and different places to the tourists, and other times I give it to locals. And the locals don't know about it a lot of times, but the tourists are fascinated by it. They said, oh, we thought we were just an Amish community. And I said, oh my goodness, no. I said, that's part of our, that's definitely a big part of our history, but And I have relatives that are Amish, and so I said, but that's not all. That really is not, and they're really fascinated by that.
I find that fascinating myself, and I love that we are able to talk about it a little bit and kind of bring it to light, not just for the locals, but for people coming in, because I know that people come here, and sometimes they say, well, we've seen everything. Oh, no.
No. Yeah, that's a big one. That's another thing I'm glad you brought up, because I get a lot of phone calls at the museum of tourists planning trips to the area. And we've been doing this so long now, with the tourism in Holmes County being a big part of the economy. But what I hear a lot from the conversation, and I usually try to dialogue with people, especially if they've been coming for a long, long time, I like to dialogue with them and just get a feel for what they're looking for. And a lot of times where it leads is they said, well, we've been coming here for probably 10 or 15 years, and we love the area. That's why we come back. And we love to shop. We love to stay down here and drive the countryside. But what else is there? And I said, well, we got the perfect spot for you. I said, you can still come and do all those things that you always did before, but you can add those into your itinerary when you come down. We also use that kind of marketing with tour groups, like when they're a motor coach company, because we hear that a lot from them. They go, we've come over and over and over. We've come here. We want something different to add. Yeah. We want to still do it, but we want to add something.
Yeah, and I understand that, especially if you're doing it as a yearly trip or bi-yearly or whatever for your clientele that are coming. And new things are popping up all the time. So we are, like everywhere, we are in the process of change. It's a little slower here, just in general, because of the culture, which is one thing that people appreciate, both those who live here and those who visit. But things do change, and so there is always something new. You may just have to kind of hunt to find a little, or find the right person, right, Mark?
Yeah, exactly.
Call the Victorian House, and maybe Mark can help you out with that. Tell me a little bit about the museums, and maybe highlight some of the special things about the museums themselves.
Oh, yeah, great. Well, the Victorian House was our first venture, because we actually, not until 2012 did we own the building next door where the Glass Museum exists.
Now, I'm just going to interrupt you just a minute. Was it a family-owned home before, or?
No, that was the actual corporate location for the Castle Nursing Homes.
Oh, okay.
And many local people know Castle Nursing Homes was actually at one time the largest employer in Holmes County, and they had over 500 employees with the various nursing homes, but that was their corporate office.
Gotcha.
Early on, the original part of the house that we have our offices and our banquet center and everything, that was built for the sister that lived in the Victorian House, the family that lived in the Victorian House in 1915. But then it was added on to by the corporate people at Castle. So that's what it was. And they had gone sold out, and the building sat empty for about 6 years. We did not own the parking lot, and so at that time is when we negotiated from the new owners to purchase the entire property. And that's when we had this big property, and like, what do we do with it? And the Glass Museum had started by Chris Sieverdees downtown, and he's a very big supporter of the society, so we dialogue together, and he said, you know what, why don't we just move the Glass Museum and we'll have it all on one campus so people can do both or one or the other or whatever their interest is.
Did he personally start the collection himself?
Yes. The collection that's in there is partly his and partly ours.
I see.
And then we have some 35 pieces or so on display actually in the Victorian House, in the pantries and off the dining room, that have been donated to us prior to the Glass Museum starting. So back to the Victorian House, we had that since 1971. The society purchased the home at auction. We had a Victorian home in Millersburg, down by the True Value Hardware, Ace Hardware, that the society owned for many years. And part of the society members wanted to purchase the Victorian House and make it their new home, and the other half did not. So it created a rift in the society back then. Lost about half of their members. And then they bought the home privately. There were three men that went together, bought the home at the auction for $12,000, believe it or not.
Oh, my goodness.
And ironically, it was the lady next door Castle Nursing Homes that was bidding against them to purchase, to tear it down for a parking lot.
Oh.
Well, of course, that wasn't, you know, acceptable to anybody in the historical site. So these three men bought it and then donated it over immediately to the Historical Society. Now, having said that, the other half, you know, didn't want it. So they sold that house and then came into the Victorian house and started all the renovations and everything that took place back in the 70s. And gradually they opened it up floor by floor as they got it restored. If you were local, you remember the house was in very bad shape. The siding was rotted, the roof was leaking, the porch was rotting off, years of neglect. And so it took a lot of time, about 3 years, to do the original restoration of it. Now, since it's gone through, we did a major roof renovation back in 2008 with going back to the original slate and copper and everything. So it's an ongoing process now to keep, you know, keep it back. But what a gem it came back to.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. It's very beautiful.
Yeah, now inside, everything is pretty much the same. There was not any major painting of woodwork or anything like that that had to be taken care of. So we're fortunate in that department. So the museum then opened to the public in the mid-70s, and it's been open basically ever since. Longer hours now than it used to be. And then the house also serves kind of two purposes. We show the house as if it was lived in parts of the home. And then our society collection of artifacts is located throughout the house in various rooms, which one time would have been maybe bedrooms, and now there are special exhibit rooms for like our military collection or our medical dental history. Lawyer's office has got all kinds of memorabilia from the county's history, from the old courthouses to old records and things like that. And down the basement, we have a lot of vintage kitchen equipment and old tools and things. So it becomes a working museum as well as the house to see.
Exactly.
The house itself, the architecture, the beautiful woodwork and everything.
This is, again, and then there's more, right?
Not
just the Victorian house, not just the Amish, but there's more to it than that. And that's, I think that's a fabulous thing to offer both locals and visitors because the amount of history, as we've said, in this area is amazing. And being the county seat and the things that have happened in and around Millersburg as a whole, you know, that just kind of that hub. I'm sure, too, that people have gone into their barns and attics and found things that are, you know, great historical and meaningful value for telling the story of the years past. So,
yeah, we get donations all the time. We've had to kind of tighten up our accession policy because we didn't want to continue to become just a dumping ground for everything, you know, like, so we kind of tighten that up and we screen everything. If somebody calls and says, oh, I have this wonderful item I'd like to donate, we say, well, first of all, you need to photograph it and document it, send it to us about the little history about it. And oftentimes it's just family stuff.
Yeah.
So we always say, if it's significant to Holmes County history, then we're very interested in it. If not, if it's just a bunch of grandma's clothes that, you know, have no significance. Now, if the person was significant in history, like Pomeran from here from Berlin, we have, you know, Atlee Pomeran, the senator's tuxedo, and, you know, things like that we will accept, you know, depending on the historical nature of
the family. It's just like any other house. You bring things in, you got to take things out. So you have to pick and choose, right?
Yeah, right.
At least that's what I found.
We are busting at the seams right now. Yeah. And it's really fortunate we got the other building because when we did that, we created archive rooms down in the lower level of the house, of the building. And one of the archive rooms has all of the old newspapers from Holmes County from 1840 all the way up to 2010.
Wow.
And we're actually right now in a joint process of with the Behal Mennonite Information Center offered to digitize the entire collection for us. So we're going to be making an announcement of that. We're up to 1948 now, so we're gaining on that project. So We have an archive room for that. We have all the county court records clear back to the beginning of the county in one of the other archive rooms. So it's become actually a working museum receptacle of, you know, a lot of local items. One of the exciting things that we found over the years, and it was just kind of revealed, the contractor for the clock tower renovation discovered that we have the original blueprints to the courthouse.
Really?
Actually, all the original blueprints with all the detailed drawings and everything. And he's very excited because they're going to go to another phase of restoration of the courthouse soon. And so he was so excited to know that we had the blueprints, and he's come out now. And so we're way beyond just a place to go see pretty things or whatever. We actually do a lot of historical research for people, for companies that are doing maybe restorations on buildings somewhere in the county, or family history, all kinds of things. Plus, in our lower level, the Holmes County Genealogy, we provide office space and archive for them. So they're there, too, if you want to research family history. Separate organization, but in the same building.
Great to know, especially locally, if you've got genealogy and want to kind of figure that out.
One-stop shopping.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Well, tell me one can't-miss thing in each of the museums. Like, if I were going to go, what would you tell me to be the one thing I can't miss at the Victorian House and the one thing I want to look for at the Glass Museum? There's too many things. I can see it.
There's so many things, yeah.
Well,
as far as the Victorian House itself, there's a lot of unique features in that house that a lot of people don't realize the house is as significant as it is. That kind of came out back, I don't know if you happen to see it, it's been probably about 8 or 9 years ago, HGTV contacted us about doing a special. It was on a show called Victorian America, and we were like one segment, a 15, 20-minute segment of it. And they came, and they said, you realize how many unique features are in this house that aren't in a lot of the Victorian homes? For instance, all the chandeliers in the house, all the lights, are made to work on gas or electric.
Wow.
So a lot of, it's really fun. When people come in, they say, why are only half the lights on? And that's because the chandeliers are a special design, that the ones that aren't on are the ones that are gas that we're not allowed to turn on because of the fire marshal. But the other ones are electric, and they're in the same chandelier. Now, we had a man from New York contact us who said that was so unusual that the entire home is done like that. You might find in one of these historic homes one like that. Because normally what happened was they would take out when we transitioned from gas to electric, they would take out and put all electric ones in. He said that is an absolute gem. So when you come to the house, that's kind of a unique thing that I tell people to look for, is that all the chandeliers in the house, and even the front porch lights, the top is gas, the bottom's electric. The foyer light is top is gas, bottom is electric. And they're so rare that he said, he was an antique dealer. He said, if you ever sell those, he said, I'll give you $10,000 for each one.
Wow.
Well, of course, we're not going to.
Well, no, you're not. No. But that's, it's nice to know.
But that's kind of a unique thing. Mm-hmm. The floors, the wonderful parquet floors with the designs, real intricate patterns, the hand-painted ceilings, as far as the house itself. And then, of course, all the content I was talking about is unique, too. But the house has a lot of unique features. It has a central intercom system that was built into the house in 1900.
Oh, now that would be interesting. It
has a gym, a sauna, steam rooms down the basement that were built into the house. And for a rural community like Millersburg, to have that kind of technology in a house is pretty
That was
unique.
Pretty fancy. I mean, that was probably as fancy as you could get back in that day, right?
So now you want me to give you the Glass Museum.
Yes.
Probably the most interesting piece is the People's Vase, or as I like to refer to it historically, that was not the name of it originally, but that's what everybody uses today, the People's Vase, but it's the Holland Vase. The Holland vase is what it's listed on as the in the original inventory of John Fenton's. That piece is kind of got an elusive history and mystery to it. There weren't very many made originally. We're not real sure why they were made, other than the clue is that on the outside of the vase, there are Dutch people dancing around a pole. Mm. Not Amish people like it was originally said when it was coined the people's vase. So there's a long story behind why they think that it was probably a custom-made piece for the Dutch royal family. And I won't go into the whole detail about that. But the reason they're so rare, there are only 8 of those vases known in the world to exist. There's only one blue one that's ever been found, and we now have it.
Wow.
After being on loan for 3 years, it was taken out several years back. It was taken down to Marietta for a auction to get rid of it, and our curator went down in to the auction and brought it home. It's in the exact same spot it was sitting for 3 years, but now we own it, and it was $150,000 to get it back.
Wow.
So we were so happy because, as he said when he went down, he said, the babies come home, because this vase has been all over the place in private collections. It's been in Texas. It's been all over, but it's now back to 3 blocks from where it was made. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's the real special piece in the Glass Museum. And there's a real story behind the, you know, that people's vase.
Oh, that's fascinating. So, yeah. And exciting that you were able to bring it back.
Oh,
because
yeah.
as you said,
that was a big,
this is where it was made. And yeah. and the glass that was made there is significant because of the type of glass it was. Isn't that correct? And it was, I mean, the Fenton brothers, of course, and their history. But carnival glass, tell me just a little bit about that and what that
looks
like.
Carnival glass is the generic term. There were other companies that made carnival glass back in the day. It was a popular glass in that period of time. It was not expensive. It was very cheap in the beginning. What they did was sold it for everyday use.
Mm-hmm.
You could buy a dozen bowls for like $1 or $2. Buy it in 5 and dime stores. And so it was not considered an expensive glass. Now
it is.
Yeah, it is, because it's very collectible. The reason that Millersburg is so collectible, so much more collectible, is for a variety of reasons. We tell the story in the museum. There was only 3 years it was produced, 1909 to 1912. Mm. That was it. So all the glass you see out there and all the glasses collected was only made in that 3-year period. So that makes it in itself rarer.
Yeah.
The quality of the carnival glass was really superior to any of the other carnival producers, including the Fenton brothers that, you know, he came from. So John Fenton was known in the industry for producing these real fine finishes. That's another reason it's so collectible. The carnival is coined from, it was actually so cheap that they would use it in carnivals, like when they had the contest where you threw and hit a target and you won something, you know, for free. That's where it came from, because they gave it away a lot of times at the carnivals. So that's a little history about the carnival name.
That's fascinating. I'm thinking in the back of my mind, Mark, we have to have more conversations.
Yeah, this is, you can so do a fun series.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So many stories,
yeah,
so little time. But thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And now it's time for Did You Know? Did you know that although there are some conflicting beliefs, most experts agree that Holmes County, Ohio, was named after an officer in the War of 1812, Major Andrew Hunter Holmes. Holmes was killed in an attack on Mackinac Island at Fort Mackinac. Early in the war, the British landed secretly on the north shore of Mackinac Island in the dead of night, and the American troops surrendered without a fight. The British built Fort George on the highest point of the island. Later in 1814, when American forces landed, they were clear targets for the British. 13 Americans died, including Major Holmes. The American attack failed, and the British held control of the Straits of Mackinac and Mackinac Island until the end of the war. And now you know.